Hi, this is Katie.
And Belinda.
And we're from Bardo.
And you're listening to Right Back Atcha.
You are listening to Right Back Atcha, the Noughties Pop Music Podcast with myself, Joel Babington and David Lynn. Today, we are honoured to have Australian royalty on the show. We have two members of Bardo with us. For those of you who don't know, they're the first winners of Pop Stars Australia. They broke records being the first Aussie band to have a number one debut single and album with monumental success across Australia, New Zealand and Asia, securing their legacy with such hits as Poison, These Days, ASAP and I Need Somebody. They've got two top 20 albums, six consecutive Australian top 20 singles, including three top five hits, three ARIA Award nominations. We have Katie Underwood and Belinda Chappell of Bardo with us. We have London, Singapore, Australia all on one call. There's so much that could go wrong. Let's hope it doesn't. How are we all today?
Fabulous, especially with that intro. It's Saturday night vibes over here, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm like Game of Thrones, Netflix, reruns, you know, it's all happening here.
Here in quarantine.
Well, we are honoured to have you here, so thank you so, so much for joining us. This is our first 10 a.m. record, so I mean, this is probably the first record where we've not got a glass of wine in our hands, but girls, if you want to, feel free to crack on.
Oh, I love that. What is that? That's just water, is it?
Or
is
it apple juice? Sorry. Juice.
We love it.
Yeah, I'm hitting it hard with the licorice tea, so yeah.
Rock. I think Katie and I, we both a little don't drink anymore. You don't drink anymore, do you, Katie?
No, I'm nine months sober now.
Right. Amazing. Yeah, I did 5 months and then I've just started to have a cheeky wine with dinner now and then, but not, I don't know, if about 9 months. Anyway.
Well, that's probably the secret of why you're both absolutely glowing, by the way.
We need to take some tips, Joel.
Yes.
Look, listen, I mean, it's completely unreal that you're both with us. I mean, if you told us about 3-6 months ago that we're going to get some sort of Bardo activity or even a chance to talk to the members of Bardo, like, we wouldn't have even believed it, because this whole idea of Joel and I doing this episode actually came about towards the end of last year, and we recorded in January, completely oblivious to the fact that you were having a 20th anniversary in a few months. It just kind of all synced up somehow. So were you guys planning something this whole time?
Belinda?
No. No, I mean, we still haven't planned anything, have we? I mean, Sally reached out to all of us end of last year and said, guys, it's, you know, the anniversary coming up. What are we going to do? And I wasn't really, I don't know. I think she came to us 10 years ago and did the same thing. And I was just not interested at all for different reasons, which I won't go into now. But I think I sort of said, let's just have a Barbie, just purely because I wanted to see the girls, you know. I miss them, and in a way we're so connected with everything for life, with, you know, like a sister in a way, blood sisters because of what we went through. So I really wanted to see the girls in person. That's all I cared about, you know. And so I sort of said, oh, a Barbie. And then Spotify happened and all the songs went on Spotify and iTunes, and I sat and listened to them for the first time in, I can't remember, many, many, many years. And I cried and I was overwhelmed by the beautiful harmonies, and I thought, what are we doing? We should do something, you know. It just purely the harmonies factor for me. I get chills with any kind of a cappella harmony situation on any kind of music. And yeah, so that's, and then I have a friend, Joe Daddick, who popped up like a mushroom and said, what are you doing? You girls have to do, he's the biggest fan. Katie's laughing at me because I said popped up like a mushroom. And he was like, come on. And I, you know, I was always quite hard on myself about being a vocalist, and am I really a vocalist, you know, because my idols are like Whitney Houston and I'm clearly don't have those vocal cords. And I never really considered myself as like a big singer. I was more a dancer and very hard on myself, even though I love singing, but I stopped singing. And so, yeah, I put that to bed, and recently I started to have a little, had some problems with anxiety for the first time in my life and kind of had a mini nervous breakdown. And the counsellor I was seeing said to me, "So you keep talking about your past singing." She said, "Do you sing anymore?" And I said, "No, I haven't sung for 15 years, literally not in the shower even. I stopped singing entirely." And she said to me, "You must sing again. You must sing again." And it all happened around the same time. All these things happened. So that's why I was so keen to do it all again. And but it didn't happen. So there is no plans to do anything at this stage, but we are singing again and we are hooking up for these online videos and there's more to come, hopefully in the next few weeks, singing together. And look, we're looking at options to maybe record the three of us, but we've got nothing to announce at this stage. It's all a work in progress. That was a very long answer. Sorry about that. I just went on a journey.
We went with you. It was gorgeous. We have to also... I just want to quickly do a big shout out. So there's this account called Pop Music Activism, and they are largely in part of who got all of Bardot's back catalogue online. So big shout out to them.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'll just bounce a little bit off what Boo said. I think definitely the Bardot music going online was a huge shift. And I think I remember the WhatsApp chat that the four of us had where we were all simultaneously listening to the album for the first time in over a decade and messaging each other and going, "Oh my God, this song and that song," and just, just kind of reliving the nostalgia live with each other. And that was, I don't know, was that like September last year maybe, Boo? Yeah. I'm not sure when it all went on. And so definitely the energy picked up around that time. And I think for me that it was just the impact of reconnecting with the girls in that way and reconnecting with the music as well, which, like Belinda, I really hadn't listened to, why would I, a Bardot album, that had been around 20 years ago. It just wasn't exactly in my playlist. So it was really interesting.
Plus we don't have CDs anymore, right?
There's that. So it's been simmering along. So we have been connected for pretty regularly for the last 6 months. But yeah, as Belinda said, I think what it is that what's happened is probably not what we originally thought, but what's happening now is kind of just taking on a life of its own organically. And I'm okay with that too. I think it's a lot more natural. It's a lot more real for us. So, you know, whatever evolves from here is what evolves. But that the connection is genuine, and I really am enjoying that.
I mean, you girls must have seen the reaction to the @Bardot official Instagram account. I don't know, are you, like, one of you running it, or what's the sitch there?
It's a secret.
Oh.
No, we have a few people doing it, but yeah, it's us. Absolutely.
Yeah, you kind of, like, started an Instagram wildfire when that account popped up. And we had our episode recorded already, and then this popped up. And at first we were just not sure if it was another fan account, because sometimes fan accounts do that. And it was just like, what's going on? And then you started teasing more and more. And I was like, David, we have to get the episode out ASAP, ASAP. So I want to take it pre-Bardot, pre-pop stars. There are two internet semi-myths about you both that I want to ask if they're true, if there's any more info about it. So, Katie, you released a dance single in the UK before Bardot. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Okay, yeah. My first trip overseas, in fact, must have been in 98. And I had recorded vocals over an instrumental track called Floating by Terra Firma. And he released it. It was quite a decent hit in the trance community at that time. So I'd recorded my vocals over, and on advice from a DJ friend of mine who I played it to, she goes, "You should totally send that over to Terra Firma, whoever he is, and see if he'll re-record it as a, you know, as a song." I'm like, why would he do that? I'm some unknown no one in Melbourne who's just made up this stuff over his track. But I sent it. And 6 months later, his manager gets in touch with me and says, "Hey, we got your CD. Claudio is really digging it. And then fast forward another 6 months and I was over in the UK recording on this guy's album. So he was working on his album, the Terra Firma album called The Adventures Of. And the idea was that I would properly record over this original floating, which then came to be known as Don't Be Afraid. But, you know, I was there all week and that was my sole purpose for being there. So we did that one song and I knocked it off, I don't know, in a couple of hours. And he said, well, would you be interested in working on any other tracks on my album? I'm like, totally, man. You know, I've come all the way here. Why stop now? So I ended up putting on some vocal effects and little riffs and little sounds on three other tracks on his album. So, yeah, Don't Be Afraid was the only sort of vocal featured song, and he did end up releasing that as a single in, I think it came out either at 99, which is when I joined Popstars, or 2000, and then the album came out. But you would never know it was me. And my artist name was Katie Ashley, which is my middle name. At that point, that was going to be my stage name. And then Popstars came along and ruined all that because it just had to be my real name. So, yeah, if you Google Katie Ashley Terra Firma, you'll find that Don't Be Afraid track. So, yeah, obscure but totally
amazing.
True.
And before we leave that, is it that London trip that you got your infamous audition outfit for Popstars?
Yes, because I went to Camden Market and...
Stop it.
Oh, what's the name of the store? Cyberdog. There's this incredible, like, raver store, and I just walked in there and went, oh my God, and just went crazy and spent, I don't know, $350 on, or pounds or whatever it was, huge amount of money on this crazy mirrored breastplate. And I'm like, I do not know what I need this for. I just know I need this thing in my life. So when it came time to do the auditions back in Melbourne, you know, 12 months later, I'm like, right, if they're looking for a pop star, I will show them what a pop star looks like.
Fabulous.
This is what a pop star looks like.
So good.
And
it worked. And it kind of worked. Like, to be quite honest, I mean, I've got a good voice, but in the audition process, I was not giving good voice. I was so nervous and my voice really struggled. So, honest to God, I think my outfits got me through like the first two or three phases of the audition. That is not a lie. Just asked my way through basically on image alone, and then eventually I relaxed and I was able to sing properly, and then it was like, oh, she can sing as well, so you know, that's good. But yeah, the outfits got me through the door, you know. It was good.
Well, whatever works. And then Belinda, there's even less info about this online and I'm not sure if it's true. Were you briefly a replacement member of the girl band Girlfriend, aka GF4?
Yes, I was. So I remember I auditioned about 100 girls in Sydney, went for it, grueling auditions. And I went to Johnny Young Talent School. I don't know if you know Johnny Young Talent School in the UK.
Iconic.
Yeah. So I trained there and it then turned into Sydney Theatrical Centre. So I got sent an audition. I think it was from that agent, or maybe I'm getting my time mixed up. But, yeah, I went for the audition and signed the contract to BMG Records, and we did some demos. I don't have them anymore. I don't know where they are. And they were finishing off the album. So basically that GF4 album that got released, their last one, the record company halfway through decided that they weren't going to put any more money in. So I think they were on their way out. So they'd recorded six tracks in LA, I think, and then they came back to Sydney and BMG were like, well, we're not sure what we're doing with you. And then one girl left, Jackie left. And I actually knew Lorinda Noble from one of the girls in GF4 from Sydney Theatrical Centre, Johnny Young Talent School. But I didn't hear about the audition through her or anything. I'd lost contact with her. She was younger than me. I remember the grueling audition. And I remember signing with BMG. I remember going to the Today FM celebrity party with, I think Kyle was there, and this is so long ago, and going in a limo that left the record company, and I was like, Mum, what do I wear? And I was like, I put some outfit together, like it was random. And all I'd done is record some demos. And then I just remember standing there and like getting out of the limo with them, and them them all being ultimate professionals, you know, signing the autographs and whatever, and I'm just standing going, oh my God, what do I do? And then I just went home and I said to Mum, that was just a spin out. Like, what was that? Like, I was 23 at the time or 21. I can't remember now. And anyway, then the record company called us in and said, it's over. And the girls were devastated. But for me, I was just a bit like, I didn't feel anything. You know, I just got in and I was working a lot at the time in the industry. So I don't know, I wasn't upset, but for them, you can imagine, I remember them crying and they were all really lovely girls. I loved working with them. They really worked well as a team, a little bit different to us in a way. But anyway, I do remember that. Like, they were very humble and very just great girls. I remember that. Worked as a team. That's the key in a girl group.
What I loved about this is that we're discovering that you sort of had a bit of a, not a probation, but like a baptism of fire into what it's like to be in a girl group. Like, was it surreal when you made the final five and you just went, okay, this is happening all over again, but I sort of have a bit more of a roadmap?
No, because being in Bardo and being selected for Pop Stars was just so different. The minute we were picked, it was just full on work. The minute we arrived in the house, it was just on another level from everything we did, from recording to, but I, as I said, I think BMG were really getting ready to let them go at the time. So really, I just remember going to not even good studios to record, like just houses and stuff. And it was, I think the girls had already realized and everyone was down a bit. You know, there wasn't this sort of vibe like, wow, we're recording a great album, we've got great songs, let's go. It was more, this is the end a bit feeling with everything we did. So no, I can't compare the experiences at all. Yeah.
Well, in a way, thank God that did end. So it did, you know, lead your path open to being in Bardo.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I have to do shout out to Minogue Collection on Instagram. I don't know if you've seen all the amazing CDs and vinyls they've been posting.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was them that brought that to my attention and they were desperate to know if you still had the demos, which you said you don't. So if you ever find them, do let them know.
Okay, I will.
So let's take it to Pop Stars. 20 years ago, but my favourite TV show of last year. God bless whoever put that all on YouTube. Let's take you back to the auditions. How did you both hear about it and what was it like on the day?
You go first, Katie.
I had no idea. A friend called me. I remember it was a Wednesday. She called me and she said, have you seen the latest Woman's Day? I think it was. I'm like, do you even know me? Like, of course I haven't. Why don't buy Woman's Day? Like, what planet are you on? She's like, well, you need to because they're advertising for a girl group, a pop group, and you totally need to go for it. I'm like, Nikki, I don't even like pop music. Why would I want to do that? She goes, but you could sing and you totally kill it and you should just go for it. I'm like, all right, all right. So I did. So the auditions were that weekend. So I went, I think it was a Saturday, I guess. And again, I went in with the, well, you know, I'm sure there's going to be thousands of people who can sing, so I need an edge. I need to just dress like a pop star. I need to look the part. They need to look at me and go, yes, she's already there. We don't have to do much. You know, that was my only game plan. If I had a game plan, it was that, to sort of get noticed and get in the door. But yeah, as I mentioned earlier, it was the first, I'd never auditioned for anything in my life before Pop Stars. So to say it was a shock that I got in the band was a massive understatement. But yet really nervous to begin with. I don't think I really relaxed until I made the Sydney auditions. And then I just sort of relaxed into it because I thought, you know what, I'm in Sydney. This is really cool. I don't need to get in. I've kind of proven to myself already that I can make the cut. And again, that was my only game plan, was just like, well, just see if you can make it to tomorrow. I really didn't expect to get in. I don't think I even wanted to get in, but I did.
Oh, my God, Katie.
So, I mean, it's like the most bizarre accident of my life. But I don't regret it, and I loved it. Don't misunderstand
me. Yeah.
Obviously, once I got in, it was like, wow, this is going to be amazing. But I, honest to God, did not really plan or expect to get in. I just thought, oh, this will be a good experience. to audition.
And 20 years later, here we are.
That's my story. So, Belinda?
Mine is a little bit different. I remember I'd like come home from I was singing in a covers band called Chartbusters at the time, and I had driven my bommie Honda home the night before from Newcastle where the gig was, and I was living in Bronte. I remember this day as clear as this morning, as clear as day, and we had this tiny little corner store at the end of our street, and I knew the lady there, and just I was getting some bread and some milk, and just as you walk out, the newsstand with No Idea and those sort of magazines were there. and there it was. It was the big sign on the front of New Idea said, Australia's answers to the Spice Girls. And I literally dropped the milk and grabbed it and like teared it open. And I was like, right. And there was the audition page. And from that moment on, I think, as Katie said, she hadn't had done an audition before, as I had done many, but I was a really bad auditioner because of nerves. I'm a nervous person anyway, let alone put me, in an audition situation. Mind you, I'm not nervous on stage, which is a weird thing, but auditions, I'm a mess. So I was like, but the weird thing is with this, I was really nervous, yes, but I was so intent on getting it. I was like, I'm going to get this. I'm getting it. Like there was just no question in my head that I was going to get it. And it's the only thing, audition, a few things in my life where I've had that desire, like I have to get this. And in my head, I'm thinking I'm going to get it. And so I went to the audition, and yes, I was nervous and everything, but and I don't think I sang well. I don't think I sang well at all in Bardo, to be honest. I think I was nervous all the time. And then the dancing.
That's not
as
true.
Well.
That's not true. I'm just going to say that's not true.
It was really hard to sing and dance at the same time, and because I'm a trained dancer, I love dancing so much. It's in my bones. So it's hard to put it this way. It is hard to sing and dance. Doesn't matter who you are. I think
it's a lot harder than it looks.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We understand.
But no,
well, you girls make it look easy though.
Yes.
No, I don't know about that. But no, so that was my audition, and but I have fond memories of it all, and you know, it is 20 years ago, but I can remember a lot of it, which is interesting. Yeah.
Was it like an absolute catacomb on the day? Like how long did you have to wait before you got to sing for the first time?
God, well, in Sydney there was, I've never seen, it was in Darling Harbour and there was just a queue of people. And I had another job to go to that Saturday. I was modelling in a shopping centre doing dance fashion parades. And I had three to go, 11, 12 and 1. And this audition was at 8:30 or 9 in the morning. And I had to drive out west to Penrith or wherever this job was. And I remember running along the line of people going, there's no way. I mean, I'd been in the industry, I auditioned a lot, but I'd never seen that many people in all my life. And I don't think they expected that many. They didn't. Like they put an ad in New Idea. Katie saw it. I saw it. My agent didn't even ring me until the day before and said, you've got to go to this audition. And I said, I'm already going. I told you about it 3 weeks ago, you know, and he's like, oh, my God. Oh, okay, okay. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I thought, well, if I stand in this queue, it's going to be all day, literally, or at least 4 hours. I'm not going to get to audition. So I ran up to the guy who was in his high-vis vest and I said, please, will you let me in? Like, you've got to let me in. I have to get to another job. And he let me in.
Oh.
And so I got into the first group. I snuck into the first group. Like, yeah.
Amazing.
Which is outrageous. Wow. Yeah. But
I mean, you don't ask, you don't take the chance it won't happen, right? You just got to go for it.
I just was, well, this was my job. I was getting this by hook or by crook. That's how I felt. And I wouldn't usually do things like that. I play by the book, you know, like I don't go me, me, me. I don't like, you know, but in this situation, I was like, knocking, you know, on his shoulder. I was like,
good
you have
you.
To let me in.
And I mean, it's really interesting that you've both kind of went in with that, you know, in different ways, kind of the same attitude, and
yeah,
it got you both in. So this show was the beginning of reality TV. How did you find having those cameras around you 24/7. In a way, watching it back, you guys are like the original vloggers. How was it? How did you react? Were you able to be natural? Or did you feel like you had to play up to it?
I think at first it was probably awkward. The thing about being on a reality TV show is for a while you are aware of the cameras, and I think you do try to put your best foot forward. But for me, after a few weeks, and you see this play out in all reality TV shows now, you kind of eventually forget they're there. And I know that seems strange to say, but when you have a good camera team, they're very good at just kind of being there without being there, because their goal is to catch you as naturally as they can. and also not get in your face. So for the most part, I think they did that well. There was only a few times, really one main time, where I just wanted to smash the camera. And that was when we were preparing to go on stage for our very first concert at State Theatre, which featured at the end of the series. And then they were really up in our grill. And I lost, that was the only time I think in the whole season I really kind of lost my cool and started yelling at the producer going, look, I understand you have a TV show to do, but we have an actual concert, an actual for real. There are 2,000 people out there, concert to do, and I've got makeup and I've got to get dressed. And I really wanted them to disappear. But of course, you know, they were looking for the money shot, which was you either crying, yelling, or both, you know, preferably. That's kind of the money shot that they're always looking for. So, yeah, that was my experience.
Agree. I agree with all of that. Absolutely. Yeah. I remember when I had the flu, and actually I remember saying to the camera that I had chafing because it was a shocking flu. And I said in my comical way, certainly not, but I remember this is, it was terrible. It was actually really terrible at the time. I said, it looks like I have a hair lip. And I didn't mean it I'm a really caring person. So I would never, ever for a minute mock anyone. But I got letters in the mail from the Hair Lip Association and, yeah, a few saying horrific. And
they aired that comment.
Yeah, they aired that comment. And, you know, and again, you know, we really... I don't think we put on an act really a lot. Like, I'm sure in certain circumstances, maybe some of us were on our best behaviour more than others, but I don't really think I was that different to how I am. I think definitely, like, I remember stressful times, like just thinking, I knew how long people usually prepare in the industry for a concert or for an album or for, you know, and I could see that we were just on this ridiculous time schedule where we were, you know, we had a national tour to do and we had 1 week rehearsal, or like just ridiculous stuff, which, as you know, even like the best of the best, they take months to rehearse for a tour. So, you know, I was frustrated at times thinking this could be better if we had more time to do everything, you know. But I mean, I think considering we all did a great job. Again, we didn't know each other. We had that to manage. We had everything to manage. And I think we all deserve a pat on our back for that, you know, and we were young.
And that concert at the end of the series was mind blowing. You know, Joel and I watched it for the first time last year and we were like, we know like what a short time frame they had, and they really pulled it out of the bag. So like, honestly, hats off to you girls for like, just, I think we just kind of felt like, okay, the five of you really wanted it and everyone just pulled together. And, you know, when it's showtime, which is kind of why we absolutely love you girls so much, because we just instantly fell in love with the commitment from that series onwards.
We had a great band as well, didn't we, Katie? We had an amazing drummer. We had Michael Samowski on keys, yeah, which helped, you know,
Absolutely. And that was, I think, you know, as opposed to a lot of the performances that we did in the shopping centres, which were all to backing track, the gigs that we were able to do with the live band, any performer will tell you, it's always better to, always a better energy when you've got live musicians. Oh, and they were the best of the best.
We were blessed, yes. Yeah.
So before we leave Pop Stars, was there any other things about the experience or memories or any of the other finalists that you connected with that you want to touch on before we leave it?
Finalists?
I don't think so. I do remember, I don't want to name names, but I do remember there was one girl, I think we shared a room for a short time when we were in Sydney, and she was almost 100% sure she was going to get in.
And who was that?
I will not name names.
Okay.
But she was very sure that she was going to get in, and she was very a little overconfident about her vocal ability. But I hadn't heard her sing, so, you know, she says she has an amazing voice and she's definitely going to make it, and she certainly was a lovely looking girl. So, you know, I kind of believed her. And then slowly over days, you know, people were dropping like flies, you know, they were sort of, and she started to crack under the pressure, you know, and I was sort of flying under the radar. I wasn't the prettiest. I wasn't even on the front foot vocally at that point in the early phase. I was just kind of cruising along, you know, and boy, she was pissed off the day she got voted off and I didn't. I could tell she just wanted to smash me in the face. It was a bit funny. I was quietly going, yeah.
She was probably sat there furious watching the finale as the show continued.
Katie was always a standout to me. I picked Katie straight away, and I picked Sophie and Tiffany were my three picks straight off the bat in the first week. Yeah, and myself, of course. But I remember that as clear as day. No, I really did. Like, I was like, her. Like, not even a, like, yeah.
To be honest, I didn't even pick myself until we were down to the final 10. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I really thought there's so many incredible singers and dancers and models and amazing people here.
And there were.
And the sad thing was a lot of them, I think there actually were some really incredible singers that were in that final
audition. Absolutely.
But they couldn't, where they were let down is the stress got to them. So the stress started breaking people. Whereas I was relaxed. So I remember this one girl, and again, I can't remember her name, and she had an amazing voice, like incredible voice. But the stress, just over days, she just totally lost confidence and she cracked and crumbled and she did badly in the audition. And I really felt for her because I thought, you know what, if they were just going for the best singers, they haven't, you know, that wasn't what it was about. It was a total package of, okay, look, dancing, singing, but the real magic ingredient was, can you hold it together under intense, unrelenting pressure?
Yeah.
And the five of us that got in, or the remaining 10 really, were the ones that survived that process. And I see now why that was so important that they did that, because once we started, it was unrelenting pressure the whole time. So, you know, you really had to be very, very resilient as well as talented. So I remember that for sure.
I remember the vocalists, being some incredible vocalists, but then they didn't cut the dancing audition, you know, so it was tough. But, yeah, and also star quality shone, you know, like it's interesting to look back,
Let's talk about Poison.
We really want to know basically your first thoughts when you heard this demo or whatever version it was that was presented to you girls. I got news for you.
God, I can't really remember I never was a really big fan of Poison, to be honest. I think it was the lyrics, but then, I don't know. Yeah, but it happened. I mean, it was a great track. It had the R&B. I love the bass in it. And now I think I like it more now than I did back then, weirdly enough.
I think it's aged really quite well.
Yeah.
When we heard the first demo, you know, you've got maybe there was not as many parts. I think my first impression was, oh God, I really am in a pop band. Like, it was, do you know what I mean? Like, it was a bit like, far out, what have I done? You know, it was really, really pop. But once all of our five voices got on it And even the original melody that they were really angling in the demo kind of changed when all five of us got on the track. And then, of course, they made the production sound a bit cooler. So I think the journey that that Poison demo went to where it ended up, by the end of it, we're like, actually, this is kind of cool now. But my first impression was, oh, God, I have to do an album of this. Like, it was a bit. But once we all got on it, then we got cool. And, of course, I fell in love with the album as we went along.
I mean, you girls said before that everything was done so quickly, and obviously with the luxury of having a bit more time, things could be finessed a little bit more. I'll be honest, when I listened to the first Bardo album, I do get that sense that maybe some of these were a little bit demo-y and it could be polished up a little bit more. But I wonder, with your kind of 2019, 2020 years, when it went up on streaming and you're listening to it again, were there tracks that came to the forefront that you went, actually, I really like this now?
For me, all my favourite ones were my favourites. Like, I love Dirty Water, I love Empty Room, I loved Holding On and Higher Than Heaven. No, so my favourites were still my favourites, but I was surprised that it was as good as it was, that it still is okay. Like, it's not crazy dated, and there's some beautiful melodies in there and, again, beautiful harmonies. Mm. So that's what I think.
We saw in the show that first album was presented to you so quickly. Was it literally presented to you as in, this is the track listing, lay down your tracks, or was there room for more? Were there more tracks recorded?
We had a short list. I think it was like about 20 to 30 songs. Was that
50,
right, Belinda?
I think 50. Yeah, I remember the Franklin's bag. The Franklin's bag that just got put down on the floor in front of us with all the demos in it. Have a listen.
So
remember?
They told us, they said, look, we have cut this down from thousands.
Yeah.
But now it's up to you girls.
50 or 30, 60, something like that. I can't remember. Yeah.
To choose, you know, your preferred final cut. So we did get some input into, no, we love that, we hate that, we love that, we hate that. So I think there were only a couple that we weren't keen on, that they were like, actually, we've already made a deal with this person, so that has to go on the album. But for the most part, we were able to contribute a little bit creatively. But because there was so little time, there wasn't really a lot of time to go, oh, well, we're just, you know, going to sit here and go through hundreds of songs. You know, we had to be in the studio. I think the timeline was basically they were turning over a track a day. So what I remember was we'd come in, we'd go to the gym, we'd come into the studio about midday. We would be recording from midday to midnight in shifts, like we'd have 2 or 3 hours each.
Yeah.
And then in the other room, some other guy would be working up the production for the next track to come into the studio. So you'd have your engineers with us during the recording. Then that would go to post-production to another team, and then the pre-production guy would kind of bump the track through, and then the next, it'd be, right, now today we're doing this one, and today we're doing this one. It was that fast.
Yeah. Although it didn't feel like it was fast at the time. It felt like we sat around a lot and it went on forever.
Well,
it felt like we were in that studio forever.
I want to just jump ahead quickly while we've still got you, Katie. So unfortunately, as we all know, you did leave during the recording of the second album. And we were just curious how far into the second album you'd got before you, you know, pulled a Jerry.
We'd just come back from the UK. So I had only recorded 2 songs. Which was Hit and Run and ASAP. And then pretty soon after coming back from the UK, everything, you know, went haywire, and then I was out the door. So not that far in. So I think it wasn't so much of a task to get me off those and for the girls to just obviously do the rest of the album with the four of them, which was, you know, a great sound. It's an interesting thing to go, well, if I'd gone back and done it differently, you know, how different would things have gone? But I don't know. I think there's just too many variables now to think, well, maybe it wouldn't have ended that much differently. You know, maybe the timeline still would have been the same, except I would have done a second album. But yeah, fortunately, we weren't too far in, and the girls could just go, you know what, we're going on as a four, and they powered on, and I think had much greater success in Australia with the second album, which I was really happy to see.
Is there a version of ASAP with all five of you on it that somebody has on a hard drive?
Maybe.
leak it.
No, it's on my computer, but that's where it'll stay.
I just remember with ASAP, it was very, I don't know if you remember this, Katie, but it's so clear in my memory, that house we were in London, and our manager had scheduled our times to record, and it was really obvious that it was like in order of who they wanted on the track. And I remember I was last on the track, and I turned up, and they only gave me literally like 20 seconds. It was like, that's enough, you can go home. Like, I hardly did any vocals on it. But the worst thing about it is everyone left. So it was our last thing to do. I don't know if you remember this, Katie, but it was our last thing to do before we left London. Mm-hmm. And it was our last day. And I think we were flying out the next day, but everyone was hating London so much except for me. I think you love London too. You and I, yeah, we I love do. London.
Yeah.
But I remember Sally and Sophie hated London, and they were like, I just want to get home. I just want to get home. And so they rang up the airlines and scheduled their and left that day. So they did their – and everyone left. Everyone went back to Sydney. And left me on my own in this big house. I'll never forget it. And I was like, I didn't even get to do much vocal at all. It was like, it's all done. Like, it was terrible. Anyway, I have vivid memories of that. Yeah, funny. Wow. But I didn't mind, because I love London. So I think I went out to dinner that night, or I did something, but yeah.
So Katie, before you have to dash, please can you tell us what you're up to now and where everyone can find you online?
Oh, sure. Instagram is probably where I reside the most. So I'm Katie Underwood Healing on Instagram. What I do now mainly is sound healing. I'm a meditation teacher and a sound healer. So at the moment I'm running twice weekly online events. One is a sound healing and one where we do mantras, which is like a vocal meditation. So that's my main gig. And then, of course, once we're all allowed out of our houses again, I'll go back to doing live events. So I work with groups of 20, 30, 40, even up to a couple of hundred people at a time. Yeah, so I'm still very much involved in music, but it's very, very different. Generally, you know, improvised and working with crystal bowls and singing bowls and that sort of thing. So that's what I do now. And I've released 3 albums over the last 3 years independently in that genre of relaxation music. So, yeah.
Well, I'm sure everyone really needs that right now, so check it out.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, we can look at the past, but it's a thrill to have the 3 of you back now singing in whatever form that is. Big thank you to Katie, and make sure you check out her socials. But for now, stick around with us as we continue to chat all things Bardot with Belinda. Just want to quickly take you right back to the first album. What was touring Asia like, and how often were you guys there?
We were there a lot. I remember we were always on Malaysian Airlines or Cathay Pacific at the time. And we travelled a lot, like every month I think we were somewhere in Asia, I think, from memory. And, yeah, we visited most of Asia, but not Hong Kong and not Tokyo. But everywhere else, I think, pretty much. Well, Asia's so big, but a lot of countries, yes.
I mean, you live in Singapore now, so do you... And I've seen some really amazing YouTube comments, like people saying, I should have never let you go was their jam back in the day. Like, do you get recognised in Singapore?
I do, oddly enough, sometimes, but not often. Yeah, I think I get recognised more in Australia, but I do randomly, like I went out to lunch in Dempsey Hill before we're in quarantine. And I remember a girl, a maitre d', she would have been sort of 30, mid-30s, and she lost it. She was like, oh, my God! And then she got everyone to take photos and stuff. But, no, it doesn't happen often, yeah.
But I actually really love that you guys got to tour and break, at least try to break different parts internationally.
Absolutely.
Because not a lot of pop stars group get that opportunity. Was that driven by you guys, or was that something the management said, you know, you should try?
I think the record company, because looked after that more than management, I think. Warner Music got onto that, and so we were with Warner everywhere they could get us to, you know. And yes, that was the highlight for me, was the traveling, and we got to see some fabulous countries, and it was amazing time. Yeah.
Are there any other pop acts at the time when you were traveling Asia, Australia, Europe, that you remember meeting a lot or seeing while you were kind of passing through?
I think it was more like Ships in the Night. So like Atomic Kitten had just been there, or I remember Atomic Kitten, Westlife. I think we passed a lot, like they'd just been there and we'd left, you know, we were coming and vice versa. There were others. Oh, gosh, what's her name? The gorgeous... Nelly Furtado, Samantha Mumba, and, yeah, an Atomic Kitten. That's what I can remember, but I'm sure there were more, yeah.
I mean, you guys came to the UK as well to promote Poison a year after it was released in Australia. Like, that must have been quite a... I want to say a little bit like fish out of the water, because it was like a whole new audience for you guys, right? What was that like, just coming in and go, okay, we want to break the UK and this is it?
Well, I mean, obviously we didn't have the fans following or anything, you know, like we did in Asia, especially in Singapore. They were crazy and so beautiful. They'd wait out the front of our hotel and give us gifts and stuff. So we didn't have any of that, but I kind of enjoyed that. I wasn't really a big fan of being that famous. I always loved to sing and dance so much, but I hadn't really thought about the fame side. So London, for me, I can't speak for the other girls, was my favourite, because I loved that we got to work with really incredible stylists, fashion stylists and photographers, and then even the recording we did, it was just on another level to Australia. I'm not putting Australia down, but it was just a very different experience. And even just going to Warner Music in London, I'll never forget going in, you know, into the offices there. And so the whole experience was just fabulous. And the morning shows we did. And no, I mean, I don't remember thinking, like, I think we were welcomed. Well, we were welcomed by the industry, but the fans weren't really around. So we just really dealt with insiders, you know, in the industry. So the people in the studios, the people, you know, as I said, the stylists and this and that. So, but no, I loved it.
Joel was a little kid at that time. And I think your first visit to promote Poison here just come, what, a few months after Hearsay had launched?
That's right. Yes, yes.
Someone speculated online that there's an episode of, I can't remember if it's Your Pop Stars or the UK Pop Stars, where Bardo and Hearsay meet. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. I know we met them, but I don't remember. Yeah.
There you go.
I remember meeting Rod Stewart, Emma Bunton. Oh. I remember so much, but I don't remember that. But I know that we did.
Importantly, Emma Bunton and Rod Stewart. Let's just say that.
Yes, I remember that.
While you were here in London, is there any nightlife that you remember going to, or things that you enjoyed in London?
Oh, my God. I remember it wasn't all of us, but I think it might have been, maybe it was Katie and Tiff and I. And Sally, maybe without, so I can't remember, but we went out and we went out with Atomic Kitten. And so the bus, like, I don't know how that happened, but somehow, I don't know, maybe they were signed to Warner. I don't know, but we ended up in two fancy black buses. And I remember I was sitting with the lead singer of Atomic Kitten. What was her name?
Natasha.
She was sitting next to me or in the bus. Like, we were in a small black bus across from me, and her boyfriend at the time, and I think she was pregnant or just fallen pregnant at that time. Would that be right?
2001, yeah, Natasha, or something. Yeah.
To the bouncer, to their personal guard, like their bodyguard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was quite handsome. I remember that. And I remember being, and we went to this fabulous party in some ridiculous mansion, and then we went to a Spanish club. Yeah, I remember that.
Amazing.
And we danced, yeah.
So you don't remember doing a GAY gig or anything while you were here?
Yes, we did a GAY. We did. Of course I remember that. Yes.
I bet that was mad, was it?
It was just amazing. Just amazing, yeah. And I watched recently on YouTube, because my friend texted me and said, you have to watch this, Steps, the reunion. And I watched it on YouTube, and they do a gig at GAY, and I was like, oh my God, I would love to do a gig again. That was just brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of reunions and stuff, that's the place to do it.
They wouldn't know us if we did that now. Wouldn't be, yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll see what we can do about that.
In the UK.
Unfortunately, Katie left, but you came back with that incredible second album, and, you know, it was edgier, it was fresher, it still, you know, really stands up today. What are your standouts or memories of that album?
I loved Empty Room and Dirty Water, love. And obviously the track I wrote, Don't Call Me, I'll Call You.
Oh, we love that. That was the opener of our episode, wasn't it, Joel?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I loved writing that. And yeah, that would be my highlights. Obviously recording in London. Yeah, what other tracks? Wasn't really a big fan of ASAP, just the lyrics. Didn't get, and I think just it was never going to be timeless. It was so that production, that sound that was so in at that time. But to me, it just didn't, it was just going to be out of date in 3 weeks kind of song. But it's still, it's beautiful vocals and I love the film clip. Love the film.
Oh, yeah.
You all four look amazing in the video. Like I was living in Australia at the time and it was just, I remember seeing on Video Hits and, you know, we didn't really, I wasn't consuming that much media. So that was my first visual of all four of you. And I remember thinking, oh my God, they've grown up. Like it's all black and denim. Like it was just such a shock, but in such a good way. It was exciting.
Do you know what? I think, I mean, I'm a big Katie Underwood fan, always have been. But I think it's actually more to do with the fact that it's four and not five. It's almost like that saying five's a crowd and what do they say? Three's a crowd. You know, like I think visually it's easier to fit four people in a frame. It's easier to take photos with four people and it's easier to do a film clip with four people. And I think that's actually the strength. It wasn't so much, I think it could have been any one of us that left actually and it still would have been strong as four. Because I think five's hard. Five's hard. It's just, it's crowded. You know what I mean?
I mean, I get it from a visual aesthetic point of view, definitely. But by that point, obviously, we'd fallen in love with all five of you and it was difficult to do that. But I can't deny that when all four of you came out, because that video had like, you each had a
four lane. Catwalks. Yeah, yeah.
It was like sick. It was sick. Yeah. Can't deny that.
Yeah.
And logistically as well, did you probably got more time in hair and makeup?
Yeah.
Things like that.
It was, we were a little bit, just a little bit lighter to travel.
So ASAP was released in the UK. Did you come back to promote it or was it just kind of the video was sent over here?
I don't know. I don't think we came back to promote that album at all. We just recorded it there, some of it there. Yeah.
So we both have your UK only version of
Stop It. Yeah. Yeah. And then, oh, look, it's so cute. I don't even have those. That's my one of my favourite shots, the black and
this
the
one.
Red.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Love that. It still looks good now, today, I think. Doesn't look too dated. Yeah. But no, I think we broke up so soon. So I think we might have come. Who knows? I know we were heading off to South Africa and we're doing Rumba and God knows where we would have gone for that second album. But yeah, it all just ended so suddenly. So yeah.
And in terms of you co-writing on the second album, is that something you pushed for or is the opportunity kind of handed to you?
I think some of us, I mean, I'd been writing, I had demos. I think Katie had been writing. No, and I think it was a natural progression and I don't think we pushed it, but we definitely wanted to see what we could contribute. You know, it makes sense. So,
Yeah.
So it was a bit of both. Yeah.
Unfortunately, after the second album, you guys broke up and it seemed like quite an abrupt ending, which you've said before. Were there any standout kind of Lost Bardo projects in your mind? Had you guys started the third album? Was there more tours planned?
No.
Was there ever a Bardo movie in development?
Nothing, none of that, but we definitely had a lot booked for that year. So we were doing Rumba again and South Africa, as I said, was booked because the show had just finished there and gone number one in South Africa. So we were heading there, but no more music, no. I think we'd talked about it, I think, but no, I don't recall.
And no Lost Bardo movie?
No Lost Bardo movie, shame. It's a shame. There should have been one.
I mean, it's so amazing that you mentioned Rumba because that feels like a real moment in Bardo's live touring canon.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just completely regret not begging my parents hard enough to let me go because we just took it for granted, didn't we? We just thought this will happen every year. And our favourite pop groups are always going to be around. But what's your memory of that particular day?
I mean, it was just the ultimate. I loved every minute of it. It was, you know, again, we had a great live band and we had great costumes and just walking out on that stage. I mean, we were, I remember Sydney, there was 45,000 or whatever, same in Melbourne. And I don't remember, I don't know if we did only two cities. I just remember Sydney and Melbourne. So maybe it was only two cities, Rumba. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But no, I just remember it being just ridiculous to see that many heads. Never seen anything like it, but I loved it. I loved performing. That was my favorite thing, was the performing, more than the recording and everything. So yeah, I have very fond memories of it, and I couldn't wait. I remember when our manager came to us and said, you've been booked for the other one, and we were paid accordingly. We were going to be paid accordingly for it, and I was like, yes, this is amazing. We'll, you know, get a bit of a check for once. But yeah, though, then it ended, so before we got to do it, sadly. Yeah,
well, we'll always have that moment.
But Mandy Moore played at Rumba, and then you guys posted something else that you did another show where it said plus Mandy Moore. Do you remember meeting Mandy Moore, what that was like?
Yeah, I don't know if that, I met her at Rumba. I met her, Mandy Moore, on the set of Channel V, I think, or MTV or Pepsi Charts, one of those. Yeah, she's divine, absolutely gorgeous, Mandy Moore. Yeah, a little star.
One of the other things that we were really quite interested in, especially when revisiting, and, you know, for Joel, this is his first time through, I love that you guys got to do a farewell special on Channel V, because not all bands get to have a proper farewell moment. So what's your memory of doing that show and how it led up to that moment?
I think I was a bit shell-shocked. Like, I think I look back to that time, and if I had have really realised it was over, like, I think it hadn't processed at that point. So I think I just went through the motions of doing the show. I don't think, I remember looking at Tiffany and when she cried, and I wasn't there yet. Like, it hadn't hit me that it was over, because, as I said, it was so sudden. It just came out of absolutely nowhere. One day we were told Bardo's over, and then we were told, and you have to do two more gigs or whatever, you know. And I think, I don't remember if it was a week or 2 weeks or whatever in that time frame to that, leading up to that last concert. I think it was pretty quick. But I know we did that gig and a charity gig. And again, I just felt shell-shocked. I didn't hit me until later that it was over. Yeah.
I mean, it must have been, difficult, you know, because everyone processes things at a different rate and all that. But have you been able to watch it back, or do you just not want to see it now?
Look, honestly, even with the TV show, I was a bit, like watching it with, watching it like that. I don't know. It was a bit cringy watching it. And even though I think it's great and whatever, but it was such a passion project for me. I was so passionate about it all. And so when it ended, I think I was mortified, you know. It was so, yeah, answer to that is I probably don't really sit down and watch it all with you know. It's a little sad, I guess. It's sort of, yeah. And then the last concert, yeah, I don't know. I don't, and I knew all the dynamics and that was going on at that time, and I knew what I knew, what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen after Bardo had finished. And, you know, so...
There's too many memories attached.
Yeah, just weird, yeah.
Was there any talks of, like rushing out a greatest hits or releasing unreleased material?
As in
back then, Bardo's ending, was the label ever like, we should rush out a greatest hits or anything like that?
Oh, God, no. They wanted us to go away quickly because they wanted us to basically just disappear. Yeah.
It makes me very angry.
Except for Sophie, obviously. They launched her career, so, yeah.
Let me know who I need to write to, and I'll be writing a strongly worded letter about how all this was handled.
Oh, you have no idea. Yeah.
And we just need to give a shout out to Tiff, who unfortunately couldn't join the recording today, but she always had to wear these, or I don't know if she had to, but she always wore these fabulous cowboy hats.
I don't remember where that idea came from, to be honest. I don't know if it was hers or the stylist, but yeah, it was a good look. was a good look. She was,
and I brought the closest thing I have to a cowboy hat with me today.
Stop it.
Just doesn't work with the headphones.
Cute.
And I mean, just to take it full way back to the beginning, Chantel's hugely talented, but Tiff joining, I think, did just make the sound so richer. And so huge shout out to Tiff.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Tiffany too. But I remember she was at my definite pick out of the girls, and because she had star quality, she had a groove about her, she had this sort of bad girl kind of vibe going on, you know, and she was just, to me, perfect for a girl group. And so I was devastated that she didn't get picked initially, but it was meant to be. I know one of the Bardo girls, and she's recently wrote about it, how it was just terrible how they treated Chantel and this and that. But it's funny because, I mean, I wouldn't say this now if it hadn't have come out recently in the press. I don't know if you know, but Chantel recently did a whole lot of press. I stole from Sophie. She came out, said this, and but she didn't mention that she stole mostly from me. And, you know, I mean, I was mortified at the time, and I also knew that 2,000 girls lined up and went through these grueling auditions and were desperate to be in Bardo, would have given their right arm to be picked. And then I had a friend actually in the top last 10 of the finals. Lee Shorten was her name. And she was, I'd worked with her quite a bit in the industry previously, and she was gutted. And so she was another one that I would have loved to have worked with in the band, you know. And so when it happened, I was like, tough love, you know, for me. I mean, yes, it was personal for me because I had my wallet and I had makeup. I had lots stolen. I thought it was the right thing to do. But, yeah, I think, again, we didn't even agree on that, you know, in the band. So it was, but no, it was destiny, absolutely destiny that Tiff was in it. And she brought her beautiful velvety tones to Poison. And honestly, I think without Tiff on that track, it may not have been a hit. You know, you don't know.
I think she brought kind of like a, maturity's the wrong word, but I think it turned it from what could have just been like another band to, it just made you all stand out more.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we were edgier, I think. Not so girly.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're at now. I know you've said you're not sure what Bardo, what the plans are or anything, you're taking it as it comes. But what do you think Bardo would sound like in 2020?
With everybody?
With however you envision it.
I don't know. I don't. I can only really envisage the three of us, because the three of us have sung together. So I can't think about the other members being in it, only, you know, artistically, so yeah, sound wise I can hear, because I can hear us three. The others I can't remember, too long ago. But no, I think whether it was all of us, or yeah, I think we'd sound great now to do something. Yeah,
like, what music direction would the three of you take? Because the tone and the blend of the three of you is beautiful, and yeah, it's so warm.
You've got such, I think the three of you, particularly in the group, don't get me wrong, I absolutely love everyone. You're so talented. But the three of you have such distinct, different voices that go so well together.
Character.
The blend is so good, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I know there'd be lots of harmonies, but as far as style, like a Dua Lipa vibe, maybe?
Mm. Like a kind of modern disco Dua Lipa vibe? Like, I Need Somebody Part 2?
No. I see it a little edgier than that.
Cool.
And then even I could see us going really acoustic, you know, and we don't really want to dance anymore. So, well, I do, but
it's in your bones.
But no, you know, at my age, you don't want to be in a midriff doing, I don't know. I mean, J-Lo does it amazingly. And maybe if I was solo, I might do something like that. But no, in the group, I think we, yeah, a lot of acoustic vibe. But then, yeah, I don't know. It's, but we're talking about it. So you never know. You know, we could say a lot more, but we won't right now. Just, you know, it's too early.
Yeah.
But we're talking, put it that way.
Well, just for fun, can I throw some reunion ideas at you into the universe and you can tell me
Please
your initial thoughts?
Do.
And who knows, maybe Australia's producers and promoters are listening. So Australia is amazing at sending their legends to Eurovision, such as yourselves. You guys go to Eurovision as a three-piece with a 2020 sounding? I know you just said you didn't want to do it, but with a 2020 sounding I Need Somebody-esque song?
Yes, absolutely. We'd be nuts not to.
Great. Booked. TV documentary with all members talking about it, which then can lead to a reunion show with just the three of you. If the other two don't want to do it, we can get Jackie O talking about it as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, why not?
Booked. Done. A brand new greatest hits, either with all five of you, or you can re-record the songs as a three-piece. And I know a lot of fans are begging for vinyl as well. What do you think about that?
God, you're funny. I love it. Yeah, I think I like the first one best, Eurovision.
I mean, it would be amazing.
And I want the most amazing outfit you've ever seen in your life and big hair.
And then you can do a big world tour, come to Europe with it, and then headline Mardi Gras, kind of, you know, big.
Amazing.
So people better be listening to that. And then last but not least, obviously, a big celebratory tour. And then, you know, if you guys want to slow things down, you can do acoustic, and then you can do this big dance solo section. So you give everyone everything what they want.
Well, absolutely. We could all have a solo moment. Look, it's all, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if you saw, there was that big pop tour that was meant to happen in Australia that unfortunately got cancelled due to our current
so pop
issue.
Or something. Yeah.
I mean, if and when that gets rescheduled, they need to get Bardo the three piece.
I'm sure we'd be open to it. I think, we'd be open to it. We all miss performing, so, yeah. I know Tiff would definitely be into it, and Katie would as well, so, yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, Belinda, is there anything you want to touch on that we've not spoken about?
No, not at all. It's been fun. You guys are so good. I loved it. Yeah, love your podcast. I thought it was brilliant.
Oh, bless
you. Thank
you
so much.
I can't believe you did that before the whole Bardo thing happened. That's, anyone to think, the way you were talking about it was like you were on it. Like you were like, I don't know, like funny.
We just recorded like well before lockdown. And by the time because it's just the two of us, by the time we got to editing it, it was like, oh, this Instagram account's just popped up. And I was like, wait a minute, let me just Google. Shit, the 20 years is like in a week. I was like, oh my God, it's meant to be. And did I hear that you're writing a book, Belinda?
I've written a book.
You already have?
Yeah, I have. It's finished. It's completely finished. And I pitched it a few years ago, and I think a lot of the publishers said, you know, you're not very well known enough to sell the copies. So in Australia, which is interesting, you know, I mean, I don't consider myself famous anymore either, but I still thought the book might be interesting, you know, to some people. But I think I'm looking at releasing it this year, regardless. I wrote it with a ghostwriter, one of my dear friends, Bianca Ross. It's my time in Bardo. It's a memoir more than anything, but it's also my time in the entertainment industry before Bardo. So, yeah, it's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
So hopefully this year.
A lot of people are going to want to read that. Again, let me know who I need to send a strongly worded letter to. Okay. As and when that does come out, we'd love to have you back.
Oh, fantastic.
I think it would just be so amazing just to see it from your viewpoint and your journey and all that. And, you know, I know you've branched out and done different things now. You know, you have your own company and all that. It's just nice to see where you are now reflecting back, because I don't think people often get the chance to go back and really treat their past with a different viewpoint, if you know what I mean, and see it from a place of love and peace and everything like that.
Absolutely. And I think that even if we don't do anything, for me, just to reconnect with the girls again and hop on the phone and talk about our time, and it's been therapeutic in a way, you know, because I think a lot of us just closed that door and it was too painful, it was just over and we walked away. But it's funny because that you say that, because I think you know, you said, how do you feel watching pop stars? Well, I think if you asked anybody to watch a video, and not just a 40-minute snippet, but like, 9 episodes of yourself 20 years ago. I think everybody would watch it like that. It's like, you know, I mean, you have your moments where you go, wow, you were cool at 20, you know, or, but still it's kind of weird. It's cringy. It's too, you know, because you are a different person 20 years ago, right? I mean, you're not, your core is the same, but you evolve and yeah, so no, but it is, it's nice that we have that, you know, to look back. And it's, you know, again, we didn't have social media back then. So, there's not a lot of photos, but because we did so much, there is a lot of stuff. There's a lot of content. That's why we're able to contribute to our page, our Instagram page. 'Cause it's amazing to look back. Oh my God, we did that shoot. There's so much stuff.
There's like, so much shoots that I've never ever seen before in my life. And I was just like, which era was that? I had to like judge by your hair color and hair length to sort of go, okay, I think that was around that single.
Have you been surprised by how much the fans have loved seeing you guys back online and showing their kind of memories and merchandise and photos that they still have?
Yeah, I have. Absolutely, I have. It's sweet. It's really sweet to think that people really care about what we did, because we did work so hard and it was so tragic how it all ended. So it's sweet. It's really, really, it means a lot. And it's therapeutic as well that all that hard work didn't go unnoticed, you know.
Well, we love it. And thank you so much. Honestly, like it's just been whatever iteration of Bardo we see this year in the future and your book, like we're ready for it and we're here for it.
So do you want to tell us what you're up to now and where everyone can find you?
Right. Well, I'm in Singapore at the moment and I have a company called House of Chapel Interiors. I'm an interior designer and we have a little place in Spain, my husband and I. So I work from there as well. I have some clients there and also in Sydney and also in Singapore. So, yeah, and I love it. I love what I do.
What's the best way for everyone to find those?
Yeah, House of Chapel Interiors on Instagram and houseofchapelinteriors.com online. Is my website, yeah.
Amazing. And you're at Belinda Chapel, is that correct?
I'm at Belinda Chapel, yes.
Amazing. Well, House of Chapel Interiors is bloody gorgeous. I was scrolling through it and I was just... So, you know.
Good, that's nice.
If and when I have the money, I'll be hiring you to do
Fabulous. We can do mates rates.
Amazing. Well, I think that wraps everything up. If and when you guys ever end up this side of the pond... Do hit us up when we can all leave our houses again anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. We will. Absolutely. Yeah. I used to live in London.
Yes.
Yeah, for 2 years, but we moved a year ago to Singapore. So, yeah.
Oh, only just a year ago?
Yeah.
Whereabouts in London were you?
Chelsea.
Lovely. Well, we can't thank you enough. So thank you so, so much, Belinda, for being on today.
My pleasure.
Bloody wonderful.
Thank you for your time.
Keep up the good work, guys. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
You're doing a really good job. So, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Take care. Bye. Lots of love.
Bye. Lots of love.
You've been listening to Right Back At You. A huge thank you again to the amazing Katie and Belinda. Follow their socials and check out the Bardo official Instagram. If you're new to the podcast, check out our other episodes. We just did a deep dive into Bardo and Scandalous, and check out our Spotify playlist to accompany each episode. You can follow us on all socials at Right Back Pod, and you can email us at rightbackpod@gmail.com. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB and you can follow David at @LoveLimmy. If you like what we're doing, please leave us a 5-star review and hit subscribe. See you next time.